Hello and welcome to another Newsmakers podcast. Today we're getting technical with Jeff Staub, Applications Engineer Manager for Danfoss. His knowledge of expansion valves is a tad scary. Hope you enjoy the information and I'll see you on the other side. All right, we're going to bring in Jeff Staub now, Application Engineer Manager at Danfoss. How are we doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
Great. We want to talk a little bit about the electronic expansion valve. So I guess starting now, can you tell our listeners the purpose of the electronic expansion valve to make sure we're kind of all on the same page here?
Yeah, sure. That's no problem. The purpose of the electronic expansion valve, as a basic function, it's the same as any other throttling device or thermostatic expansion valve. It's to inject an appropriate amount of refrigerant liquid into the evaporator to ensure that the heat load is being absorbed. At the same point, it ensures that there's a positive superheat to protect the compressor, and also ensuring that the superheat's not too small to prevent any liquid flood back to the compressor. However, there are some very specific differences between an electronic expansion valve and, let's say, a thermostatic valve or a piston or fixed orifice, whereas the EXV gives you several advantages over the other devices. You can see that in many newer systems, there is a very high varying mass flow, could be a variable speed compressor, and the EXV gives you the ability to properly match the liquid injection into that evaporator for high degrees of mass flows. Specifically, you'll see them used when variable speed compressors are used. Another reason is to have a positive shutoff during the off cycle, and this prevents liquid migration into the evaporator and the compressor sump on during the off cycle. Whereas a thermostatic expansion valve, it only controls based on superheat. Whereas an EXV, you can have the positive shutoff, or it gives you the advantages of opening the valve prior to the compressor starting up, and that helps relieve some of the high pressure differential across the compressor and reduces some of your inrush current, so it doesn't, the compressor's not starting over such a high starting torque. And as well, you have the ability to control to a minimum stable superheat signal to dial in a very low superheat and optimize your evaporator to the highest possible efficiency point. So overall, that's kind of the general purpose of the electronic expansion valve.
Okay, great. Can you talk maybe about a few important items to consider when you're making the selection of an expansion valve?
Yeah, and here again, when you're looking at the selection of an expansion valve, as with any expansion device, you want to look at the range of the load. If you have, whether it's a variable speed system, if it's a walk-in cooler, what is the total load that's affecting that valve? Many people think that a 3-ton valve is sized for a 3-ton system, but many times that 3-ton valve will control a load that ranges from 1.5 to 3 tons. So you have to look at the load that it's operating under, the type of refrigerant. For certain, there are refrigerants out there, R410A has a higher maximum working pressure or a higher operating pressure in the system, so you need a valve with a higher maximum working pressure. If it's a CO2 transcritical, you need to select the valve appropriately. The operating conditions, will it operate with a high pressure differential or a high ambient temperature or a very low ambient pressure, low differential, or is it a pretty fixed condition in a commercial refrigerator, for instance? You then need to consider, if you then step into electronic expansion valves, you need to consider the type of valve. Is it a stepper motor valve? Is it a pulse width modulating valve? And you'll have to select a controller that will appropriately provide the correct output for the type of electronic valve. And then when looking at the controller, there's a lot of different functions that you need to consider when looking at the selection of the controller, such as, is it just a basic driver? Is it a full-blown controller? Is it just a superheat controller? Or does it have an early open function, a closed function, a pump down, an MOP control, or minimum stable superheat? So you really need to take consideration in the selection of the controller And does the controller have the full functionality that you need to control the expansion device appropriately for a given system? And then, of course, you need to consider the accuracy of the superheat signal. Unlike a thermostatic expansion valve that has a bulb and you'll select it based off of the refrigerant type, you need to now consider the accuracy of a pressure and temperature signal that you have for your superheat input, or if you want to go with the temperature signal. So you have a couple more components that you have to take into consideration when looking at an electronic expansion valve.
Alrighty. Any items about the expansion valve that'd be important for contractors to be aware of or to keep at the top of their mind?
Yeah, I think specifically now when you're looking at troubleshooting for contractors, the troubleshooting of it, it's a bit more difficult because if you're looking at a thermostatic expansion valve, well, you're looking at the valve itself. So you're looking at the subcooling ahead of it and you're looking at the, let's say, the bulb mounting. With an electronic expansion valve, you now have multiple components. You have the valve itself, you have the controller that's driving it, open and closed, but then you have the input to the controller. So you have your temperature sensors, your pressure sensors. So you have to be aware of your signal input from your sensors. You have to look at, let's say, just the control of the valve. And typically you can manually drive a valve open and closed through a controller. You'll look at the coil voltages on the valve, whether it's either a pulse width modulating or a DC output for troubleshooting. So from that respect, it is a little bit more complicated to isolate an item for failure. As far as the installation of the valve itself, they're typically a very easy installation. Typically, it's a standard brace joint, as you would do with any other expansion device. You do have to wet wrap a valve, and then it's most of them are plug and play, where you'll plug the valve directly up to a controller, a 4 or 5 wire input that's plugged up directly to the controller, and then the controller can take your sensor plugs directly into them. So from the installation, it's not too difficult, but the troubleshooting, it is a little bit more complicated to go through each device for troubleshooting.
All right, and how about maybe some common misconceptions about the product that you find are out there?
Yeah, I think one of the common misconceptions that I would say, and I would say that this is probably a major difference between, let's say, the thermostatic expansion valve and the electronic expansion valve. Many people think that a thermostatic expansion valve will hunt or modulate open and close erratically, based off of, let's say, just the bulb charge in the sensing bulb or where that bulb is located. However, one of the things that you really have to consider is the dynamic effects of evaporation in the evaporator. And you can get to that point. There's no one individual point when looking at the evaporator that you can see the complete phase change, that you have liquid prior to it and vapor after it. It's a transitional period, and now you throw in the effects of unequal air distribution as well as oil flowing through that evaporator. You get a very dynamic effect of this evaporation. And if that evaporation point or the flow of this evaporation point is getting too close to the bulb, you get what's called an unstable signal. And that's just the dynamic effects of the evaporation process. And many people think it's the contributing factor is the sensing bulb onto it, but it's just the dynamic effects of the evaporation process itself. So when you move to an electronic expansion valve, a misconception is that an electronic expansion valve, it always controls to a very, very stable. However, if you've throttled or you've set the superheat to a too low of a value to where you're getting to this liquid floodback point to where liquid is coming or approaching the temperature and pressure sensors, those sensors will start to sense this dynamic transition from vapor to a liquid, and your electronic expansion valve is going to hunt. So just by moving from a thermostatic to an electronic expansion valve doesn't necessarily mean that you're always going to have a stable operating signal. Now, the electronic expansion valve can typically operate at a slightly higher superheat across all of the different ranges to where you can get a very efficient mapping of the superheat to match the varying loads. So you can get a
Jeff. We really appreciate all the information. I know our listeners really love the technical stuff. Is there any place they can go for some more information on this topic?
Yeah, absolutely. It's if you visit danfoss.com and go to the North America, in the product section, you can look under all of our data sheets that we have under electronically operated valves for both pulse width modulating and stepper motor valves. And there's quite a bit of information that's out there on the web as far as stepper motor valves or electronically operated valves.
All right, great, Jeff. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Jeff. Hope everyone enjoyed that conversation. If you want to listen to any other podcasts, visit us at achrnews.com, or you can always find us on iTunes. Good times, everybody.